Hey everyone, this is Andy. After a while, I'm back. This time with Elizabeth Knight of Purposeful, talking about the need-finding process of helping social entrepreneurs solve a real core problem.
Findingimpact.com. Findingimpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Finding Impact podcast. This is a show where we identify the challenges facing social entrepreneurs and bring on the experts to help resolve them. And this time we are digging into a new series on helping founders with finding a problem worth solving. Now, just a quick pause on the situation we're finding ourselves. This is sort of late March in 2020 when the world is in the grips of the coronavirus, and there's a lot of fear going around, and there's a lot of, you know, questions about our future, about how life will change. And I'm using my voice to bring you a little feeling of normality again to help connect and reduce the physical distance between us all. I know this is a time of great uncertainty, so what is important is for us to stay connected, to think about a future of hope, and about what we can all do to make a difference in this world. And that's what has got me back to the mic. And it's a real pleasure to be speaking to Elizabeth Knight today. I'm basically asking, you know, where first-time founders start, okay? So how do you get to the point where you can start building a product or service for a future market? In other words, how do you find a problem worth solving? And this is the short interview series we're doing for now, and we'll see how we get on. But we're talking about human-centered design in this process as a tool, as a structured way for really going deep into a problem. Elizabeth gives some experience of her journey to creating an organization that helps young people do something of purpose in their lives. And I love this. This is all so relevant for today. So thank you for listening to me in your earbuds. As always, I love your feedback. Andy@findingimpact.com. Drop me an email. Okay. Without any further ado, ladies and gents, I hope you enjoy. Hey everyone, I've got Elizabeth Knight here, and Elizabeth is the founder of Purposeful, which is a new social enterprise empowering young people to create careers driven by purpose. Before this, she was at Bloom, which is a startup incubator based out of Perth, Australia. And as you'll hear, Elizabeth is from Australia. We're going to be talking about the need-finding process. So this is helping young founders, or any founder really, making sure they are solving a real problem, a core problem, and using design thinking as a tool for that need-finding process. So a bit more about Purposeful. Purposeful gives young people a structured way of finding their purpose, which, God, I wish I had that as well, you know, instead of just sort of going from one place to the other. So they help provide people with a structured way of finding their purpose. It's their mission to help an entire generation feel confident, motivated, and excited about their futures, which is so much in need these days. They're founded by young people for young people. They're launching their first series of programs this year, and you can find out more about them at purposeful.org.au. So, Elizabeth, welcome onto the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. And it's great to be back. It's great for me to be back on this podcast after a little while of not talking, not sharing information. And it's a time when the whole world is in upheaval. And I guess a lot of people are questioning what is their why. You know, it's a very soulful time. How are you coping with the whole sort of situation?
I mean, I think like most people, it's quite overwhelming, definitely. And a big part of it for me is that it's so easy for us to access information now that the story about what's going on changes by the hour almost, which is more information than what we're built to really be able to process and handle, I think. So it's been really important for me to take time away from social media and find better ways to connect with what's going on. And a really awesome opportunity, in my opinion, to reconnect with yourself and think about, you know, what does really matter to you and what is it that what is the life that you want to sort of create for yourself now that maybe you don't have access to it at the moment.
Too much information. I know what you mean. You get bombarded with messages left, right and center. It's just trying to keep on top of the latest information on what is real. It gets exhausting. And you're right, I don't think we can process this much information so quickly. So taking like proactively disconnecting is really helpful.
And using that as a strong point, I think, because we really hardly ever carve out time in our lives to do nothing, to actually just be with yourself, not scrolling sort of through your news feeds. But what does life look like without that? I think this is a really important time for people to explore that. Mm. So, yeah.
And I find using a journal and writing with pen and paper away from any devices is so helpful for that as well. Do you do anything like that?
I am a complete nerd with that kind of thing. Brilliant. I have quite a structured approach, I guess, to journaling that came about pretty organically for me just because I needed it. And for me, it's really important to have my thoughts on paper because if you're dealing with something particularly complicated or hairy, it can be really therapeutic to have it on a page in front of you, and then that's kind of out of your brain. It's a really important tool for me, actually, across all areas.
Brilliant. Well, me too. I'm just finding about that. But anyway, more on the topic. Right, let's get back into the topic. So thank you for coming on to talk to us about the need finding process. Can we just start with what is need finding and why is it important?
I think for me, it's important because it's actually a bit of a shift in terms of how we think about entrepreneurship and creating value as an entrepreneur. I think a lot of the language for a long time was around finding an idea and being able to grow that idea, and that's sort of what we focused on. But from my experience, that was actually it wasn't a very sustainable approach for a lot of people, because if you come across an idea, you test it, validate it, and it doesn't work, then you essentially don't have anything to come back for, because you were just exploring a singular idea. Whereas I think if you're trying to build a business or an enterprise around a need where there is a real problem, then there's a much greater scope to produce value and to solve a problem in a sustainable way, as opposed to just growing an idea, in essence. So I think, yeah, and need finding is really about finding a place to be able to create the most impact. I think most social entrepreneurs would resonate with that. That is what motivates them in the first place, is to create genuine impact.
Mm. Yeah. So it's not staying away from just an idea, but making sure that it's rooted in a real problem. Yeah.
A real problem and a real experience that is a priority for that individual or group to be solved. Whereas if you're focused on ideas, then there's a lot of ideas that would just be nice to have, but they don't necessarily respond to core needs that we're experiencing and then going to be willing to use and pay for as well, I think. So it's a really important reframing.
Well, I think you just said two things really important there. Just break them out. So one is about core needs, and another one is about willing to pay for. Because you don't necessarily have, people will pay for something which is a core need. But I think for a problem to be worth solving, or to go for as an organization to solve something, it needs to solve both of those things, right?
Definitely. And I think if you take away the pressure at the beginning of having to come up with a business model that's going to be profitable, and instead you're focused on finding a need, a real need, that people are experiencing, then it allows you to get to know that problem in a lot more intimacy and detail. And I think that the more that you become the expert on that problem, the better, because you're going to be in a better position to solve that problem for the people experiencing it. Whereas it's going the opposite sort of direction and trying to focus purely on where there's market opportunity or potential profitability is actually quite short-term thinking nowadays, and doesn't necessarily lead to a sustainable business, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you're saying that if you just trust in that, if you go deep into a problem, go deep into the, get intimacy and detail into the need, mm-hmm. and the problem that you're trying to solve, or that, then, you know, and just forget about profitable business models until you know it really well enough that you can then think about the whole willingness to pay and, you know, how much, you know, what is the business model behind it, but start very much in the problem.
That is my approach, and it's counterintuitive to some of the typical advice that you get, but I had a problem that I experienced myself, and that was that when I left school, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no direction, but on paper it sort of seemed like I had it all worked out. And in reality, like, what followed in that period was a really difficult transition from school to my future, I suppose. And it was like it had been the biggest problem that I'd experienced in my life at that point, because there were no solutions available. So I began with something that I had knowledge of and that I'd personally experienced, and had a hunch, I guess, about that potentially other people are going through this too, and that gave me a clear starting point, I think, to begin with, and to pursue further, because when you're at the beginning of your journey, it's very difficult to find direction and to know where you should be pushing, I suppose. Whereas if you're grounded, if your strategy is grounded in responding to a problem, then you've always got something to come back to and something to guide you in that beginning sort of stages of starting a business or an enterprise, where that you don't necessarily know what the next step should be. So that was my experience, and it led to me being able to create a much better solution, because I wasn't necessarily feeling the pressure of this needs to instantly make money. That came later for me, and it meant that I had a product that actually really worked. And then the challenge was about how do I scale this, and in what format is this going to be sustainable for me as a business owner?
Which is all very much unique. So you're saying that you were in that problem yourself. So you experienced the problem of what, and for your case, it was, what do I do after university? And that was the, so you experienced it, you lived it, and then you were a very good you were in a very good position to help solve that problem. So is that really important to, but not, I mean, so you were lucky enough to be able to experience it and be in the sort of your shoes of your customer. But that's not always the case. I mean, if we're designing solutions for low-income people in, you know, in informal settlements, for example, how do you experience that, what they're trying, what their problems are?
When I was at Bloom, we'd have a lot of people that would come to us and they wanted to become entrepreneurs, but they didn't have an idea or a problem themselves that they'd experienced, that they felt that they passionate enough about to pursue. So they were very much in that position where they just didn't have something to grab onto. And what we found was when we did reframe the conversation and allowed it to be more about the not only their experiences as an individual, but the strengths and the unique factors that they could bring to the table, that they were then able to use that to find problems themselves. And for example, we had a person come to us through one of our programs that the problem that they wanted to solve was misinformation, and that's all that they knew about it at that point in time. It was just something that they'd picked up on. And I think where design thinking then comes into it is it gives you a tool, a framework to then be able to explore that problem in more detail, because it assumes that you don't know anything, essentially. It forces you to actually go out to the customer and the people that are experiencing that, and it gives them a platform in the conversation, I suppose. It forces you to make sure they have a seat at the table in directing what the solution is and what eventually grows from that. So that, I think, that's where, for me, design thinking is really an important asset that people can use to solve that.
Excellent. So what I heard is that you had, or that it's quite good to have a issue area or a topic or something that you're interested in, which your example was misinformation. I love that. But it could also be, you know, education for low-income people, or it could be healthcare, or it could be rural access to basic services or something. And then you use design thinking to go deep into that problem. Also pull out the other point you made, is like making sure you're aware of your own strengths and what unique contributions you can make. So once going into design thinking, to the design thinking process to find the core problem, being very self-aware of what you can contribute and your own strengths as well. So how has design thinking helped you purposeful, like designing that? So you were already in that experience and you already experienced it, so you already had the empathy in a way for your customer, but did you use design thinking even more?
Definitely. I think for both ends of the spectrum, for me, I'd experienced a problem, I knew it inside and out. The biggest challenge then was being able to communicate that really complex, deep kind of experience that I'd had into something that other people could understand. Whereas if you're someone that, for example, is coming in with the misinformation problem, just a really broad area that they don't know specifically what aspect of it it is that they're wanting to pursue, for both people, it helps you to simplify and clarify your message, the problem itself that you're trying to pursue, and essentially just cuts all of the noise out of that initial phase. You'll have lots of coffee chats and that kind of thing when you're first starting out, where you're trying to sort of ramble on and explain what you're doing and why to someone else, and you can tell that they're sort of nodding along, but they have no idea what you're talking about. So it was a really good tool for me to simplify things and to be able to say in one sentence, like, what is the problem that I'm trying to solve? I can't tackle all of this. So simplifying, that was one thing that really helped me at the start. And I think it also takes your ego out of things, because I said before that it's really important to understand the strengths and what you're bringing to the table. But conversely, it's also important to understand the biases and the way that your experiences and maybe your passion is influencing things negatively as well, your blind spots, essentially. So if you're using design thinking, even something like a lean canvas, it removes you out of the equation and makes you, I guess, the observer in the process, which is really important because it helped me to see blind spots that I definitely didn't know that I had at the beginning, and forced me to take a more holistic view of trying to solve the problem for young people. And for example, for me, education, and anyone who's in the education space will know that there's a lot of stakeholders involved. They all have really complicated, drawn-out problems that you've got to address all of their needs at once quite often. So if I hadn't done that, then I would have just steamrolled ahead, I think, with my solution for young people that couldn't have been scaled in any way, shape or form, because I hadn't talked to the people that I needed to be able to enable that.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So primarily it was helpful for design thinking was helpful for simplifying your problem or the problem you were trying to solve down into its core essence, and that's helped with communicating to other people. But also it challenges your biases, your assumptions, and really helps. It's a disciplined approach to looking at all sides of a problem. And in doing that as well, you're also making sure you're talking to all of the different stakeholders in the ecosystem of your idea, if you like. Brilliant.
And fundamentally that you're always responding to a need where there is a need. I'm sure everybody has been in meetings or conversations at times when it sort of feels like people are going off on tangents and not really sticking to the point, whereas design thinking prioritizes the customer's experience and I guess the experience of the people that you're trying to help. It means that they don't get lost or sort of forgotten in that equation. And for example, in education, often a lot of the solutions that are created are for young people, but young people aren't actually in the room in those conversations half the time. Whereas I think using an empathy-based approach, you can't forget that. You can't forget who it is that you're trying to serve, which is really, really important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So making sure that you're using this empathy-based approach and you're walking in the shoes of the people you're trying to serve. And also it always helps you to, because you know your problem really well, it always helps you to ground yourself as well, right? You always know what to come back to. For example, if you try an idea and it doesn't work, you know, it always helps you to come back to what that process that you've done, that very structured process to get to the root of the problem.
Yeah, definitely. And it also helps you to also show your progress, I think, as well. Completing something like a lean canvas every couple of months is actually something I'll do quite regularly, because between, say, a month or so's period, it changes the problem. You'll have better insights or more knowledge or a deeper understanding of what the problem is and really who it is and that you need to respond to specifically. So it helps you to see quite a maturation of the idea or the problem itself, I think, as well, which is important because it can be easy to get swept up in the process at times. And I think it's important to be able to see where you've come from as well.
Yeah. And then what about, so once you've been through the, you know, a discovery process in a way, this human-centered design process of understanding your problem, the core problem you're trying to solve, when is enough enough? I mean, how do you know when to move on and to sort of try and test different ideas to see how, if they're solving your problem?
It's a great question. And even recently in my experience, I'd begun with something that I knew really well and then almost forced myself to take a step back from that and validate whether this was a problem beyond my own experience. But then I think there's a tipping point where you've done so much validation that it can become confusing in a way. It doesn't necessarily help you to gain clarity because you see the scale of the problem, and a lot of people run from that. In education, there's so many things that I could choose to address. And I think when you get to that point, which you know quite intuitively because you get to that feeling of I don't know what to do next, that's where strategic thinking is really important. And particularly for early stage founders, I think that's when the role of your own strengths, experiences, the value that you can bring to the table is really important. Understanding then, okay, in this landscape of problems that I now understand, where am I best positioned as an individual, or where is my team best positioned to solve this, and what aspect of this can we really make an impact on? That's the lens that I view things through for purposeful. Because, for example, in education, you could say that a huge problem that we have here in Australia, and I assume it's the same in the UK as well, is that our curriculums are really overcrowded and teachers are, you know, having to learn so many new things and be able to teach them in a lot of detail to students. So there's a real opportunity to help teachers to build capacity for development and to be able to teach the future skills that young people need. But I don't have any experience as a teacher, and navigating the landscape from a teacher's point of view is very different to the experiences that I have and that I know I can really the value I can bring to the table. So it makes a lot more sense for me as a young person to not ignore my age and the role that that can play in it helping young people to relate to what it is I'm trying to do. So I think that's when the strategic thinking is really important to help you to find some structure after you know everything, essentially.
Yeah. So then going back to that, so self-awareness, what are your strengths, what you think you can contribute, but also as well, you know, as you said, that intuitive part as well, what most excites you, maybe what would you really feel like you could really go for, and this is something that is close to your heart. So there's that whole piece in that strategic decision making bit that you've got to look internally about what you can bring to the problem, and then there's the whole process about externally, and you're basically mapping against one the other, right? And then sort of maybe coming up with some possible ideas once you've mixed all of those together.
Exactly, and that part of the process shouldn't be underestimated, but I think it's a lot easier to come up with ideas that actually respond to problems in a meaningful way once you understand the problem a lot better. And context is really important. Obviously, I'm speaking from experience as being a solo founder, first-time founder, and that was really what I needed. And I guess it's about once you've removed yourself from the equation enough to get clarity on what's actually going on in the landscape, then you can bring yourself back into it and go, okay, so, but what is it, like you said, that I'm actually really interested in? What am I passionate about, and where's the market opportunity? That's when you bring in those more commonplace lenses, I suppose, to look at the problem.
And it's really, let's not belittle those, but they are equally important steps. There's no point in going and going with an idea if there's just, you know, you're only solving a problem for five people. There's no way you've got a market if you are trying to charge for that sort of thing. So there is also those following steps which are really important, but grounding yourself in this really important need finding process using human-centered design really helps you go deep into the top, into the problem, whilst, and this is a surprise to me, it's something I'm taking away from this, is a look inside, look internally, find out what you're good at, what excites you, and where you are in your life, and what unique contribution you can make, what perspectives you have, and what experience you have as well. So bringing that all together. You've mentioned the lean canvas. Maybe you could tell us what that is briefly, but are there any other tools that people can use in this process?
So a lean canvas is essentially a one-page business plan, and the purpose of it is to capture all your assumptions on one page, so about the problem you're trying to solve, your solution, your customer segments, revenue streams, the new unique value, all on one sheet, literally, to replace, say, a 100-page business plan that used to be expected of you. And I think really what's essential about that is that it's about testing your assumptions. So it forces you, like we've sort of talked about, to assume that you don't know anything until you validate that with your customers themselves. And that's to help you to save a lot of time, energy, and money, essentially, by actually understanding where the real pain points, needs, and problems are. In terms of other tools that I use, I don't use like a lot of structured or more formal tools myself, but I've taken bits and pieces from different things, I think, that I've been exposed to. So, for example, with a lean canvas, what I think that doesn't account for is the role of the individual, like we've sort of discussed. It doesn't allow you to explore then what am I really passionate about, what are the strengths that I bring to this, and that's going to help guide you and help you to know which opportunities you should be jumping on. And it also doesn't necessarily assess, it's a snapshot in time, I guess. So it's always changing, and we've seen in the last month or even the last week how many assumptions have radically changed, basically just from all the disruption of this virus. So it's not you shouldn't take it as verbatim, I suppose. And to be honest, that's like the main thing that I've used, and I've seen lots of variants of that. And this idea of human-centered design and what the problem-solving process looks like. But a core part of that for me always has been empathy, because I think that's a thing that we're very quick to forget. So it's not a bad thing to overcompensate and really be trying to always put yourself back in your customer's shoes, because more often than not, we do lose touch with that as the business gets more established. It's easy to kind of assume that, okay, I know it now, I've got it, and then steamroll ahead with a particular element of things. So, yeah, it's the purpose, I think, of any of those tools is to ground you in what's actually going on. So anything that serves that purpose for me is great, and that can take a lot of different forms depending on where I'm at or the challenges I'm facing at that point in time.
Brilliant. Well, Elizabeth, where can we send people to find out more about Purposeful?
To our one page landing page. We're going to be launching our first series of programs officially this year, which I'm very excited about. This is definitely at the tipping point at the moment between I know enough now, I think, that I can act and feel confident in where I'm headed. So if you're a young person who isn't sure about what they want to do with their future and need some guidance that doesn't come from your parents or your teachers or careers advisors, then that's the place to go.
Brilliant. Well, it feels like it looks like as well from everything I've read that it's solving a real need. So, Elizabeth, thank you very much for coming on the show, talking to us, give us your perspective and your insights. I encourage everyone to check out the show notes, and we've linked up especially Elizabeth's TED Talk as well, which is incredible, on the website. And appreciate it, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
And that was Elizabeth Knight of Purposeful. Thank you, Elizabeth, for coming on. I felt that was just so useful. We talked about human-centered design as a structured way to help with the need-finding process. We talked about going deep, getting intimacy and real detail into a problem. We talked about finding understanding what your strengths are, what your unique perspectives are, and making sure you are fully self-aware as a way to then strategically use that process to define which direction to take your journey in, right? So you don't want to go after something that you don't feel confident in, that it doesn't excite you, that doesn't play to your strengths, that isn't solving a real need. And this, hopefully, is a way to get us there, this process of this empathy-based approach. And then using tools like Lean Canvas to, put down your assumptions and make sure you're routinely going through them to to address them, to challenge them, to make sure that you're not just, you know, amplifying your biases and your myopic way of looking at the world like we all do. But actually, you know, it's a structured way to uncover the real problems and hopefully point you in the right direction. So I hope this was useful. As always, I'd love your feedback. Andy at findingimpact.com. Drop me a line. Let me know you listened to this. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Findingimpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.